Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, and it is my pleasure to have with us today Chris Sheldrick. Chris is the CEO and co-founder of What Three Words, a global address system which names every 3 square meters in the world with a unique three-word address. Some of their backers include Intel, Mercedes-Daimler Group, Sony, Deutsche Bahn, SAIC Motor Corporation, Aramex, Horizons Ventures, and Alpine Electronics. Daimler acquired a 10% stake in the London-based startup last year and built it into the navigation systems of its newest A-Class, B-Class cars, as well as Sprinter commercial vehicles. A bit on Chris as well. He worked in the music business for 10 years, booking bands and managing productions for events around the globe. He was constantly frustrated with suppliers not finding site entrances and bands not finding their way from the hotel to their gigs. Hence, he tried distributing addresses and GPS coordinates for years, but both failed him on numerous occasions. So hence, he was certain there was a better way, and therefore, What Three Words was born. It now accounts for 103 people in its offices in London, Mongolia, South Africa, the US and Saudi Arabia. And to date, it has raised a total of $56 million across 9 funding rounds. Chris, welcome and thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Radu. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So maybe let's start with the inception. Let's start also with your story because it's a fascinating one. You worked in the music industry. You organized live events. People get lost, equipment got lost. That seemed to be the frustration that kind of got you into starting this. So tell us a little bit more about how you started, what was the story, and, what's the background?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, firstly, I actually grew up on a farm in the British countryside, and we have postcodes here in the UK. But if you're in a rural area, your postcode often does not lead people to your door. So for decades, we've had delivery drivers showing up in the wrong place. I mean, if they even get to anywhere near our house, it's kind of a success because they're normally calling up sort of saying they're by a hedge and a tree, but about a mile away. So I kind of always was aware of this issue around addresses. And then I worked for 10 years running this music business to only realize that the address problem is worse if you're in a freelance industry where people are going somewhere new every day. So that can be like trying to find the back entrance of Wembley Stadium at gate 46B or trying to find the entrance to some kind of Italian villa halfway up a mountainside. You'd give people an address which was sort of villa something, comma, town name, and it just wouldn't resolve in cars or in sat navs, and soon enough you were back to look for the opening in the hedge, which is fine when it's one person you're trying to meet with. But if you've got 48 suppliers all delivering something, that is a monumental hassle. So I guess I was just particularly the way my life went. I was always just exposed to this issue of addresses. And then so what I tried to do to fix this for me was to get everybody using latitude and longitude. I was like, look, everybody can just input an 8-digit latitude, comma, space, an 8-digit longitude, and everybody's going to show up very precisely. I thought I'd just tell everybody to do this, which is wonderful in theory, but in practice, people, your everyday consumer, and especially professional musicians, are very bad at accurately transcribing latitudes and longitudes into whatever car, GPS device, sat nav, phone, or whatever else they might be using. And on one particular day, we did this event in Rome, the truck driver who brought all the gear from the UK mixes up a 4 and a 5 of the latitude and arrives an hour north of Rome, not an hour south of Rome. And this was a serious issue. And you suddenly realize, because, he thought he was going to Rome and therefore just didn't know there was a problem. I guess I thought, okay, there's got to be an easier way for people to do this. And I can't believe that, we have latitude and longitude, but it's so rarely used. And then I kind of realized why. It's actually just very hard in practice. So I guess the whole idea was, how do we simplify a latitude and longitude into something very, very simple for consumers? And so I chatted that through with a friend of mine called Mohan, who's a mathematician. I was like, how do we reduce these 16 numbers into something human memorable, very easy to communicate? And we batted some ideas around. We looked at making an alphanumeric code, but we realized we'd have to have about 9 characters, which we felt was too long. And we kept thinking. And then it was, we kind of happened on this idea where if you took combinations of three words from the dictionary, something like table, chair, spoon, that there's enough combinations of three words that you can uniquely name all of the 57 trillion 3 meter squares in the world with their own three word address. So, you know, coffee branch pyramid is the name of one of them. You might move 3 meters to the side and get cafe custard spatula, you know, and you keep going and you have your own unique three words for every 3 meters in the world. And to me, that felt like something that my musicians could get behind. I was like, I'm sure I can say to somebody, turn up at Coffee Branch Pyramid, and they would. This is something that everyone could wrap their heads around. And so Mohan and I came up with the idea. I then got in Jack, who was a friend of mine who had run a language business and thought, hey, you know, we're going to need a languages specialist because we want to do this in lots of languages. And then that was kind of how we started What Three Words.
Wow. Fascinating. So definitely there's some correlation, as we were talking before the pressing the record button, between the music industry and figuring out creative solutions to problems, which is great. And I wanted to maybe bring into the attention, because one of our listeners had actually the question, you know, what's the purpose of the product, what value it brings, and why the world needs it. And I wanted to link that to a very clear and life-saving, potentially, life-saving case study with how you're using or you're collaborating with the, I think I read, with the emergency services, if I'm not wrong, in the UK, and how there is a specific case study with how they're using What Three Words to very accurately and pinpoint the exact location of the person that is in danger or has gone through an accident or something. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, there's lots of uses for What Three Words, and emergency services is one. You know, normally the communication of your current location isn't something which you necessarily think that that there needs to be a solution for. But with emergency services, a lot of this is still done over the phone. And when you're on the phone to emergency services, there is still no, even in 2019, way of accurately and electronically transmitting the GPS coordinates of your phone device. So you are resorting to have to explain a series of directions or anything like that. So for the emergency services, if people have the What Three Words app on their phone and they can simply relay the three words over the phone line to the call center, then people can incredibly quickly know exactly where the emergency is taking place and dispatch people out there. And this has been something which has really taken off even in about the last 9 months here in the UK. It started with one call to Hertfordshire Fire Service last summer from somebody who was in the field and read out the three words. And that's kind of escalated into something where a lot of the UK emergency services not only support What Three Words, but actively tell their communities so that they're educated on the app and they have it on their phones ready. And that they can then call in when they have an issue.
Mm. No, that's super. And I wanted to talk a little bit to the application. So you said that is one of the applications. Maybe let's go through, and you have a few listed on your website. Maybe let's go through a few of the other, you know, fields and domains and case studies or use cases where What Three Words can make a significant and is already making a significant difference to different industries and applications.
Sure. So, I mean, I think if you think about the ways that we use addresses in our lives, it's normally when we want to go somewhere. And also if we want, let's say, an object to go somewhere. So normally with a delivery. Most use cases will boil down for addresses into one of those two things. So, for example, in the mobility, people are navigating, we are now built into Mercedes cars. So for the new Mercedes cars that come off the production line, they come with What Three Words installed as standard. And that means you can get into your car, you say, hey, Mercedes, navigate to What Three Words, index home raft, as an example, and the car will then navigate you straight to that 3 meter square. And that is something which is rolled out globally. And it's just a big sign of the way that whole industry is going, which is how do I make the user experience in the car as straightforward as possible? I think everyone wants to get away from twisting the dials and all the things we had to do kind of 5 years ago, or even now in a lot of cars, to sort of clunkily input things into that head unit. Turn the car into a voice assistant, and then What3Words helps because it's a very simple way by voice that you can accurately and uniquely specify where you want to go. You'll get away from all of those issues of road names being duplicated in the same city. Oh, is it that Victoria Road or is it that Victoria Road? And just very simple by saying a three-word address. Now, after Mercedes, we're also now in Ford cars, something called the Ford Sync system. And it means that you can now speak a three-word address to a Ford car. And again, you can navigate to anywhere you want to go. And you will see shortly there'll be more cars which support What3Words in exactly the same way. Now, really, this use case is what then extends to apps. So you've got apps like NavMe, the world's biggest offline navigation app. Put your three-word address straight into NavMe. Even if you have no data, NavMe will give you turn-by-turn directions to where you want to go. So we are just, I guess, talking to all of the big players in that automobility sector to get What3Words integrated as a standard. Now, if you then look at the e-commerce and logistics field, this is exactly the same kind of thing. People want to get somewhere very specifically, but it's normally about taking an object. So it is, let's say, in e-commerce, I've bought something, I want it delivered somewhere. It may be where I am now, but it may be where I'm not now. It may be at my office and I'm at home, or vice versa. So I need to give a specific place where that package is going to be dropped off. And this process works to varying degrees wherever you are in the world. It's generally easier if I want to go somewhere, if I know where I'm going, but in a delivery case, you know, generally speaking, the person does not know where they're going. And so it's really, really important to be very precise for that delivery company to get it right. So that is how we're working. Our first deal was with the Mongolian Postal Service. There was a very forward-thinking board member there who said, we want to be at the forefront of this technology. Fast forward, and we're now used on e-commerce checkout pages throughout the world. So there's, for example, the iStore in South Africa. If you order an Apple product, you'll be invited when you're doing the checkout to input your three-word address. If you know it, because it then will help their courier service find you. There's an online grocery company called Wadi in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia really struggles with a lack of address infrastructure. And again, exactly the same thing. On the checkout page, you will see that invitation to put in your three-word address. And that's it. It's always the same use case. It's always the same way that it's delivered, which is a widget on the checkout page, which helps people put their three-word address in. It's then about getting that passed to the delivery company and making sure that their systems are able to use a three-word address or latitude and longitude, which it translates to, at the back end to make that delivery. I guess aside from those two main use cases, you've got things like drones, which are now much more popular, and even people experimenting with drone delivery. Well, how are you going to tell the drone where to go? Because a street address is actually a pretty large area, and often the pin drops you on the middle of a building. Whereas for drone delivery, you need to specify, is it the front garden? Is it the back garden? Is it a bit around the side? We need to think far more accurately. I think everything that we're doing boils down into one of these core use cases.
You got me really curious. Let's talk a little bit about Mongolia. I mean, that's a fascinating. How did that come about? I'm just personally curious because you said there was a very progressive thinking board member, but how did it come about? I mean, it's not the first country that you would think of, right? I mean, definitely they probably have some, and you can think vast amounts of land for sure. But how did you end up, opening up such a strong partnership in Mongolia?
Sure. So I was actually at the World Economic Forum meeting in Dalian, China, and met this board member from Mongol Post there. And we got chatting, and he at first said, he actually wasn't a board member of the Postal Service then, but he was a huge fan. He then called me back when he became a board member and investor in the Post Service and said, actually, Chris, there's a huge opportunity here in Mongolia. Yes, there's a vast country, many of it without address infrastructure. But once he actually saw firsthand the issues the Postal Service were having, it's when he said, look, there's an opportunity here to transform this country. And he's an influential guy, and he brought us there and helped us with a lot of publicity and got us, I guess, into popular culture there as well. A lot of people tell us when they're around Ulaanbaatar that they will be going to a cafe and they will see a three-word sign in the window, which is a big piece of work which was done a couple of years ago to sort of ingrain what three words into the fabric of society. And people there, I mean, there's, I think, 20 plus e-commerce sites now in the country. I mean, it's a relatively small e-commerce scene, so that's most of them. And they will all have those what three words fields on the checkout page. And it's something that just repetition in the society gets things known and used. And when you don't have a way other than directions, people really wanted to have something very simple to use. And you'd even see in the most recent Lonely Planet guide to Mongolia, you'll see that printed next to every single point of interest in that book is the three-word address. So it just helps any travelers getting around the country get to exactly where they want to go to. And that happens totally organically because the author of the guide went to Mongolia, saw that what three words was being used, and therefore added it into the book. So I guess it's just a great example of how through one innovative party you can spread the word and rally an entire community around doing something new.
Yes, and I mean it's not about necessarily about the nuance. It's about the utility and the fact that it's so practical and it was so badly needed. Yeah, I find it fascinating. Obviously, Mongolia is a huge amount of land, and there's other countries like that in the world. I guess you need to identify the forward-thinking board members of postal services, right? So, or the influences in the respective markets too. But it also works like the snowball effect, because the more you have this user case studies and the more you have this type of sharings that you can propagate, then it's going to be easier and easier for you guys. So fascinating case study. I wanted to also kind of go into the little bit further into the, because a lot of our audience is from the supply chain side, from logistics, e-commerce, last mile side. So in the world of e-commerce, which is a booming world, right, which is basically double digit growth if most of places in the world, right? So here in Southeast Asia is growing like crazy. China, obviously, US, Europe, pretty much everywhere. And the fact that I don't have statistics, but I'm pretty sure there's a lot of time wasted in terms of, you know, couriers arriving at the wrong place at the wrong time, or God knows what, getting lost. Have you done any specific do you have some case studies or some sharings that you can bring to the table in terms of this kind of help that you've lent with the what three word type of solution to the final mile logistics and e-commerce delivery issues that are currently being in different markets?
I mean, I think that, you know, the issue of couriers getting lost and time and money being wasted is universally understood across that industry. I mean, quantifying, I think UPS have a figure that for every driver per mile that they waste, it costs the business $50 million per year. And I'm sure that's going to be consistent across anybody operating at that scale. And when we've actually quantified it with our customers, and these are people like QuickUp in London and Aramex in the Middle East, you're talking, you know, huge, huge savings between 20 and 40%, depending on what the scenario is, that you can knock off just because people are going to the wrong place. And often that's happening in the last mile or two where they think they're near, but actually just not being able to locate the front door. Means that the driver is going around in circles or even sometimes can be incredibly close. But if they can't get hold of the customer to understand exactly where that entrance is, then you have this problem. Now, as soon as that extrapolates through every driver, every delivery, this is a huge problem. And I think the people are aware of it. It's a case of how they are going to respond to actually getting a solution put in place, because the the e-commerce logistics world is complicated. It's normally the logistics provider who is the one that really cares about this issue the most, because these losses are on them. But actually, it's the e-commerce customer who is the one directly interfacing with the consumer. So you have to get everybody moving in harmony. You have to get the e-commerce customer to get a three-word address widget on their checkout page. And you need to then have a logistics company who are prepared to deliver to a three-word address or a latitude and longitude, which are basically interchangeable, and be able to respond to that and not rely on street addresses. And this is actually a bit more elaborate than it sounds in practice to get everybody making that change in parallel. Ideally, you have an e-commerce customer who has their own logistics arm, because then all of the incentives are totally aligned. But that's not the way that most of the market is, and they're two different companies that you have to deal with. You then have the issue of, it will have people using routing software, and the way that it flows there, does one have to get the routing software to integrate? Sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes no. And all of the component parts, this is what is actually needed to get something like What3Words working in the sector. It's not as simple as the mobility sector, where you just plug it into whatever that navigation bit of software or hardware is and go, great, consumer puts in 3 words, navigates there, done. The e-commerce, logistics, supply chain industry is far more complicated about the flow of information, and it takes more effort to get a new system like What3Words integrated.
I'd love to go a little bit, because therein lies the crux of the challenge, right? I mean, you know, great idea. There's a lot of great ideas in the world. How do you implement it, right? So maybe we can take the example of, because again, it's a fascinating example, because it's the scale, the sheer scale is massive. Let's take the example of Mongolia, and maybe then we also take an example of maybe Aramex or somewhere like that. So I'd love you to maybe walk us through, and the audience through, how did you manage to successfully implement it? So in Mongolia, okay, it started with that influential person that happened after that to be the board member and to be announced as board member of the Postal Service. But what were some of the steps and the process that you followed to make it successful, right? Because it didn't happen overnight, and definitely people started talking about it. But where did you start, and what were the, you know, what were the next steps that helped it be what it is today, right? Because I think now, for the first time in Mongolia, they are able to receive mail, they are able to register for a bank account. I was reading they are able to receive food deliveries by using the three-word address, which was nowhere possible just a few years ago. So how did it, were there certain steps that were involved, and that looking back, you can see, okay, this is what made it successful?
I think it's really just about doing all of those things in parallel. And I think it's as you are training the postal workers. I mean, to be clear, like we set up a local team in Mongolia, and we trained every single postal worker in the capital city on What3Words was. And that was groups of people sitting around one of our team with smartphones in hand, downloading the app, trying it out, understanding the three-word address for their own homes, the postal workers, and then understanding how this can be used in the field. So that effectively they're your evangelists for you as well. And they understand it through and through. It's not like they're just being told to press another button without really understanding how the system works. Everybody has to understand it. And we did that. And all of them gave us their time, because Mongol Post was prepared to invest that kind of time to learn. In parallel, we were speaking to the biggest bank in Mongolia called Khan Bank. And they had this issue. They were just starting credit card delivery. And it's incredibly frustrating for them if people don't get credit cards. This is an important product that people really, really need to get. And so they added simultaneously a field onto their credit card application form, which said What3Words, plain and simple. And then again, this wasn't just a secret formula and suddenly everyone did this spectacularly and knew what it was. They actually trained all of the bank tellers across the country onto What3Words, what it was. They made a training brochure, pamphlet, if you like. They even ran a competition so that the people, the Khan Bank staff, were incentivized to understand it, incentivized to ask the consumers for it, to get the consumers to download it. And this was all happening in parallel. taking again those 20 plus e-commerce sites, we went to them all while this was going on. And you can't just do this by putting one person in a country. You need a team of several people. And we were getting there. So we were getting the checkout pages integrated. So to get all of these things, you're basically generating your volume of three-word addresses to actually come through the system so that then as soon as that postal worker has been educated on it, they see a three-word address and they know what it is. You can't train them and then a year later have got your stuff together, because by that time people understandably have forgotten what it was that somebody told them about a year ago. So the skill to this whole game, if you're going to build an ecosystem around a new standard, is to get everything happening at the same time or as close to that as you can. And that is admittedly easier in a smaller country like Mongolia, where you're very, very clear on all of the moving parts and you can move everything in turn. I think as you get bigger and bigger, that gets more complicated. But if you are dealing with a bigger organization who have more elaborate internal communication tools, there's nothing to stop that happening in the same way. I mean, Aramex in the Middle East would be a good example. They've done a lot of internal communications about what three words up and down the organization. So there we haven't had to go to every person in turn. They've done a lot of it themselves. So I think there's a way that you apply that to what you're doing. But then back to Mongolia, in parallel with all of that, that's when we started approaching all of the local businesses saying, are you aware of what three words? Do you want to have a sign? Do you care about people finding where you are? And before we got Lonely Planet, we actually got all of the local travel guides to put a three-word address throughout their guidebooks so that people realized what the benefit was. So I would say that the skill is doing all of these things, realizing that not one of them in isolation is what drives it forward and gets usage. You have to get a standard used by starting it off in all of these different ways. And that's how you do it.
Yes. This leads me to the question that the audience had in terms of the business model, because definitely there's quite a few user cases that you've shared with us. But how do you actually make money? What's the business model long term?
Sure. So the What Three Words app and map site are free for consumers. Anybody can download the app, find the three-word address, type in a three-word address, and use it. What people pay for, or generally businesses pay for, is to have this the tool, the API or the SDK, which converts three-word addresses into latitude longitudes. And just to be clear, an API is a web-based platform or way that a company can simply send a three-word address to our server, and we will then return to them a latitude and longitude. And all of their existing software will be built on latitude and longitude. So it's like an encoder decoder. And that is exactly the same way that addresses are monetized today. There's actually nothing different that we're doing on the business model. So let's suppose you use a ride hailing app and you type in number 41 Regent Street. What people often don't know is that the ride hailing app have to pay to send off 41 Regent Street and receive back the latitude and longitude. So our model is exactly the same. It's about changing three-word addresses into lat longs rather than street addresses. But it's something that the industry are used to paying for. And therefore, it doesn't really matter if you're doing it with a street address or a three-word address.
Wow. That's fascinating, actually. So it's basically you're wanting to change the industry standard in terms of point of reference. You would become the point of reference instead of
London. We would like the industry to move to three-word addresses as a way of specifying a delivery point, but we're not changing the model in the process. We're keeping the model the same. Yes. There's nothing else that people will have to be paying for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And at the same time, that's a humongous task, yeah, because the world is big. And I think you mentioned 57 trillion unique addresses and unique three-word combination for every three square meter in the world. So then there's, and I think we also spoke a little bit before we started about Charles' question, right, in terms of registration and in terms of scale, pure scale of having 7.5 billion people on the planet at the moment or something like that. it's humongous in terms of overall getting more and more and more of that population and more of these institutions and postal services and all of that to come. And local governments, of course, Mongolia is a great example, but there's a lot more to come and onboard your system, right? So how many do you have registered and how do you see it scaling? So you have enough of the global population to have that actual global scale.
Sure. I mean, I think with any new standard, there's going to be a journey from when you start on day one to when it's just being used day in, day out by everybody and it's second nature. And any single consumer or business has their free choice to go, I am going to be first on this and I'm going to use it on day one when it's going to be a little bit harder and we're going to have to help with awareness. Or people can say, I'd like to wait right until the end, until this is so ingrained in the fabric of society that this is just very easy for me to take off the shelf. Everybody knows what it is. And we will do it at that point. And every day we come into contact with consumers and businesses, and people are at varying degrees along that scale as to what works for them, as to when to take it up. I mean, when the UK Emergency Services started looking at it, it was when that first person, so you've got a particular sort of things that have happened here, right? So the person called up who knew about What Three Words, who was in a field when there was a fire, and they also felt confident enough in it to be able to use it in that stressful situation and say to the emergency services, have you heard of it? You've also got the emergency services who had heard of it and they said, sure. And once that particular environment had happened, the emergency services felt able to then tell other emergency services to use it. And at that point, and you know, we'd told people about it in the sector before, but of course, until you get over that hurdle of, well, when is the first emergency call going to happen with a three-word address, you struggle to get momentum. But of course, once you start, off you go from there. So you find actually there's quite a few people on that spectrum of adoption who may not want to be first, but they may want to be nearly first, if you like. Yes. Exactly the same with the car companies. Now that Mercedes have integrated, so many car companies are now keen to have a look at it because they're realizing that this is a new thing for the sector, which feels more trusted to them, which feels more credible. And therefore, they're really keen to be kind of not quite first, but very fast followers, if you want to use that expression, to then bring this in. Now, there are still companies that you talk to who go, we would only like to adopt this kind of technology. We would like to be the last ones because that is just the way that this company operates. That's normally the reason they give. We prefer to do everything last. We don't like we don't embrace innovation. They'll often be quite open about that and say that they will only take things when it's enormously trusted. And that's the way that company works. So I think it's, one can't sort of ignore that or push through it and say everybody should be first and everybody should be happy to be the ones to bring this new innovation in. But, you know, in turn, you've got to go, okay, fine, I'm talking to a company or a person who wants to be much later down that process and say, that's fine that you've been integrated in this, fine you've been integrated in this. However, until 7 billion people are using it, it's not for me. And that's cool. And there's just no point. There's no point spending a lot of time on those people and companies. You have to go for the ones that matches what your state of the business. And when you walk through the door, there are people who today will say, wow, I am incredibly convinced by What Three Words the product, incredibly convinced by the brands that we have on board today who are using it. And this is the time that they're going to jump on board. And those are the ones we're entirely focused on. Because then it gets us to that next step and on you go. I think my point is that you can't please everybody because everybody has their own time. They're going to jump on something which works for them, whether that's smartphones or any other kind of technological standard or revolution. Everyone has their own criteria for when they want to join.
Yes. I guess the next thought and question that comes to my mind is, how do you select? Because again, your pool of potential clients and potential people that would find that, I mean, of course it would be, I mean, at the ideal state, right? When you're finished, when your mission is done, if ever it's going to be done, but let's say when most of your mission is done, the whole globe is mapped, right? But right now at the phase that you are in terms of, you know, finding those early or very early adopters and identifying them and not spending too much time on people that will come only at the very, very last stage and that are kind of resistant to change. Because you have such a multitude and palette of potential clients, how do you find, I guess, and decide? Because you can't be speaking to everybody, right? So, I mean, I saw, and you have had a lot of successes recently. Then you've shared, you did the integration in South Korea's Kakao Map, right? Which is the largest Korean online platform. You had the launch in Mexico, in China. Also, I saw that you had the integration in the Cabify app, which is kind of the Uber version in South America, if I'm not wrong. But how do you kind of find this case studies, clients, potential clients, and correctly identify fastest? Okay, these are the people that will most likely use this fastest, and not spend so much time if there's a process around it, you know, on the other people that maybe are slower in the adoption.
Sure, I think that's something you get better at identifying over time. And deciding what you will and won't concentrate on as well. I mean, a lot of times people call us up and say, you must come to X country because there's a huge problem with addresses. And if you come here, I'm sure that, you know, this will be adopted incredibly quickly. And you have to really judge which of those you're going to go after, because, of course, you have a limited team size. And there's only so much of the world you can be in at one time. And so we, I guess, strategically work out what is likely to lead to what, and which things ideally are geographically centered in the same place. So take Kakao Map. There we met a company who are incredibly forward thinking and innovative, hugely ticks the box there. It's a great household name within Korea. And it also now leads to a lot of expansion opportunities for us in Korea, because Kakao Map actually drives so many other services. So yes. It's somewhere that we've had an eye on for a while, went and spent a bit of time there. And because we're also now spending more time in China, it makes sense, because geographically they're very close to each other, for us to work on both simultaneously. But I think it's one of those things you've got to look at how big is the country, because sometimes, like with Mongolia, at some point you're looking for something small in a more sort of controlled ecosystem. And then sometimes you're looking for scale in what you do, and you want to go somewhere where there's a lot more consumers. And I'd say, you know, like many businesses developing, it's kind of like an elaborate game of chess, but even more so with What Three Words, because it's a standard that you want more consumers and businesses to adopt. And that additional validation you get with every single new company or adopting it, you're often looking for the first in a particular sector, or if the sector is slightly different to the last one, what are you trying to get from this new integration that you want to talk about? And those are often different things. Sometimes it's pure consumer numbers. Sometimes it's that validation of a particular use case. And then you've got to throw geography into the mix as well, and you've got a fairly large matrix that evolves. But I would say that a lot of it's just based on good common sense of the things that we've learned, and maximizing our time on the ground wherever we go with our team.
Yes. I mean, ultimately you're about 100 plus people, right? 103 people in 5 offices. So, you know, there's a lot of countries, there's a lot of different businesses. So you need to be very good at, and I'm also guessing that out of the 100 plus people that you currently have on your staff, maybe half of them or more do more of the coding things, and not all of them, of course, are in commercial sales partnership side of the business, right? So it has to be a very focused approach, because you don't have infinite resources. And also you need to, I'm also thinking, and having run businesses and having helped a lot of businesses throughout our consulting arm as well, it's also a matter of making sure you don't run out of money, right? So you are doing all of this whilst at the same time making sure you don't run out of fuel for the company as well, and you're able to fund it. And of course, the moment you start attracting these big brands, like you mentioned some in the car manufacturing side, it's very good. It's almost like a stamp of quality, a rubber stamp of quality that you're on the right track. And one of the listeners was wondering, right, if you were to look long term beyond the navigation solution, how are you thinking? I mean, again, he's kind of asking the question that I've kind of answered, but I want to ask you because I might be wrong as well, right? And he's asking how to adopt the method in the daily life of individuals, in a sense that, do you imagine someday that we'll basically just be giving our address to a friend coming to visit by just saying the magic three words combination? I think you've kind of answered that, but anyways, I'll ask it again. It's because it's a different way of asking it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, people have been doing that already for years. It just depends on who you are. Like, this is actually not the big leap. It's really simple to just tell your friends, hey, come to a dinner party at word, word, word. This is the first thing to do. People are doing it throughout the world. But I guess that comes down to the adoption curve. Some people would see that maybe as beyond the navigation. I would see that as thing to do, number one. And do it this Saturday. Tell people, you know, when you've next got a social event, give a three-word address, try it, see how people find it. They're probably going to like it. They're probably going to find it easier. It'll generate interest because if they don't know it, it's going to be different. But they're going to see the value in it. So like many new things, just start, I guess, would be my advice on that. Just start using a three-word address and don't think of it like this seismic shift. People are going to get where they want to go more easily and more accurately. I think that's a good thing.
Yes. I think, you know, if you manage somehow to incorporate the largest and biggest piece of movie production, which happens to be three words, Game of Thrones, Chris. I think you should incorporate that. And if you manage to put an address, I'm sure you have, and do a campaign around it, a lot of people will be, you can play with it, right? Yeah.
Guttingly, there are no two-letter words in English, so you won't find any ofs. Advise you not to read into the words in terms of meaning. The three words are definitely random, and do not have meaning attached to them. So yeah, it's purely a mechanism to communicate a 16-digit number.
Yes. Well, I mean, talking also about getting people curious, that would work for, when we communicated over email, and when I communicated also with Kate, if I remember, your assistant as well, and when I saw on her signature the three words address to your office, it definitely got me thinking, because sometimes, of course, I knew your story, but when you see it, actually, it's like, wow, that's actually interesting. So it's also a matter of getting the buzz out there for you guys, because it's scale. It's scale, and the more people talk about it, the more people try it. Some will eventually implement it, and then the word goes out even further. Another question that I found quite fascinating and interesting, and it can be more and more of relevance in the context of deliveries and all of that, is the plans and the question whether you have any plans to incorporate height. Because, an address would take the delivery to the front door, but whether the consumer lives on the first floor or the fifth floor is a pretty big difference. And for deliveries in cities, that will be extremely valuable information potentially. So I don't know, do you have plans also to incorporate height? Does that matter at all or not so much?
Height massively matters when you're making a delivery, because a lot of things are indoors and not on the ground floor. Whether it's right for What Three Words to incorporate a height parameter now, I don't think so, but mainly because the supporting technology, so the indoor GPS positioning, the indoor maps, the indoor navigation, I don't think those pieces of tech are yet good enough that if we were able to say index home raft and then let's say the number four for the fourth floor, I don't think that the supporting technology will actually get you there. And I think people then have a bad experience. And we don't want people to have a bad experience. There's no point us allowing for, whether that's fourth floor or 4 meters or whatever else, for people to only find, actually, I didn't get there. I think this is something for the future, and I don't think we should underestimate what a seismic, huge job that is to actually map the indoor spaces of all of these buildings and give people a seamless indoor navigation task. I'm sure it'll come. I just don't know how quickly. So until that point, I think just let's acknowledge the enormous job there is in accurately defining the entrance to buildings that people want to make deliveries to. If we can solve that, then think about those hundreds of millions or billions of dollars plus in those wasted courier hours that are spent not finding the correct entrances. There are plenty of ways that you can do it. You give a three-word address and you say it's apartment 106, or you say fourth floor, and all of this additional information that you can give to help a delivery driver make the delivery. But I don't think us trying to be the one size fits all and incorporate height at the moment is the right way to do it.
Makes sense. How about, where do you plan to expand next? So, you know, you have five offices, the main one in London, and then you have Mongolia, South Africa, US and Saudi Arabia. How about Asia Pacific? Obviously, Mongolia is in Asia, of course, but I'm sitting in Singapore. Southeast Asia is growing tremendously. Lots of problems here as well in terms of not having, I can name some countries, maybe I shouldn't, but there's countries that have some significant issues also in terms of the logistics and addresses and all of that, big problems around deliveries. Do you have certain areas or certain places where you want to target next, or certain strategies in Asia Pacific, or what's your thoughts around it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll have seen that we just launched in China, which is fantastic. We have new investors from Japan in the form of Sony and Alpine Electronics. Kakao Map is a great opportunity for us in Korea. And I think we're also having a look specifically at Southeast Asia, a lot of which, as you say, have enormous addressing infrastructure challenges. So we are looking at exactly where we're going to place that second Asia hub outside Mongolia. And it may well be in Hong Kong, Singapore, or somewhere that we can service the region from. So I think that is coming soon, and we will we'll confirm in due course.
Okay. I'd love to talk also a little bit about talent, culture, leadership, selecting people. It's the soft skill side, right? Because building a business is always about having a great product, having a great idea, which you obviously have. It's actually, you're redefining a standard for the way we do things, which is even more progressive than most ideas and more creative. But it's also mostly about people to make it successful or not. You seem to have a great culture at the What Three Words. I've looked also online at the movies, at the type of people that you employ. So I'd love to also share with us a little bit, what's some of the key things that define your culture for you as the CEO, because you're the main architect of that. And you know, how do you make sure also that you maintain it and pass it on to your new employees?
So I think, when you say great culture, that I guess the whole point about that is that it's totally subjective. For us, a great culture is about being a culture that works for What Three Words. And whilst on one hand, it sounds like stating the obvious, to work at What Three Words, you have to believe that creating a new global standard in the form of three words is a good and wonderful thing that you are really keen to evangelize about at every opportunity. And that means that this isn't the right place for people for whom that's not a fit. This sounds like stating the obvious, but let's say if you're coming here to sell What Three Words, what you're really coming here to do is to evangelize about What Three Words as to why people want to join what we're doing, as in other businesses who we partner with and who will be our customers at this point in the journey. We're not a company that sells chairs or printers, and we don't want to sell cheaper chairs or printers than the last chair or printer that you bought, or better chairs or printers. It's not that kind of sale, because it's so different. And I think that it's just about embracing that and going, okay, this is the type of company we are. Come here if you're totally excited by our mission and what we're doing, and making sure that those are the people that we see and we talk to, and those are the ones who end up joining our company. But realizing that we're not right for everybody, and therefore the culture does grow exactly like that, because we're just totally upfront about it. And I think that being upfront about what you're not as a company is as important as what you are. And by being absolutely crystal clear about the mission that we are on, people can make their own decisions.
Hmm. And how about in terms of, let's say, when you're hiring people, and there's obviously a certain soft skills attached to that, certain traits attached to that. So believing in the mission and believing in the vision is very important. But are there some other characteristics that you look at on the soft skill side in terms of, okay, knowing, okay, this is a good fit, this is not a good fit?
I think, it's variations on the theme that I was saying before. I think just by the nature of what we are, which we're a global first company, our strategy has always been to be active in a lot of parts of the world simultaneously. And therefore, our team is constructed of a lot of people who are very worldly in nature. I mean, when a lot of people get come in, like there's one guy who'd like cycled around the world once, and that was kind of part of his pitch to us and why he was appropriate. And that was a really good pitch to us because it means that he's seen a lot of stuff. He knows innately the problems of trying to find your hotel when you are stranded in X country. And that for us is as important as anything, that people firsthand understand and get What Three Words without us having to say What Three Words is good because of this. And if you live on a street that's never had an address problem, and if it doesn't resonate to you on a personal level, then it may not be right if you're just struggling to understand it. And you know, a lot of the UK is well addressed and doesn't have the problem. So I think for us that's the most critical thing. If people firsthand have encountered all of the ways in that the world is different, specifically around addresses, then that's what makes you an ideal fit for our team.
Yes. How about the hard skills, technical skills? Because obviously you're hiring a lot of technology people, the programmers, data scientists, and all of that. What are some of the hardest tech and hard skills to find and to attract or to retain when it comes to the common days? Because obviously you're competing also with the Googles and the Facebooks and on the technology side, there's a lot of options for people to join companies, right? How about yourselves, right? So what are some of the skills, the hard skills that you're looking for, and how do you attract those people to What Three Words?
So one of the things that we're expanding into really fast at the moment is voice and voice search. So when you've got an Amazon Alexa device or a Google device or any of the smart speakers and assistants, if they've got no screen, you yes. have a particular tension around addresses that I guess is more concrete than it has been when you have a screen, which is if yes. I want to uniquely tell this voice assistant where I want to go or where I want something delivered, as soon as you've got two streets with the same name in a city, you have a problem. The fact that there's two Lonsdale Roads in London is a problem. If I say, I want to get this delivered to Lonsdale Road, London, number 14, well, which one? If I want to get it delivered to Victoria Road, London, well, which one? And so from our point of view, we are now furiously making What Three Words a plugin for all of the main smart device, smart speaker, smart assistant systems, which are driven by voice. Now, a lot of people, especially those on the tech side, are really interested in voice. Voice is not as straightforward as it often sounds. You have to work out what people might have said, because there's no such thing as like an exact match. When you have somebody who types something in, you can work out what did they type exactly. When yes. you're dealing with voice, that's no longer a thing. It's all about confidence scores and what do I think somebody said versus this. And you never get 100% certainty. So What Three Words was designed, and we made this decision very, very early on, to design it in a voice-friendly way. We put table, chair, spoon in one place. We put table, chairs, spoon in another place to specifically help a voice assistant work out which one the user meant based on where they are. Now doing all of the intricate coding for this is actually a really interesting tech challenge. And we've got a lot of people here who are loving building all of this stuff because it just makes a voice assistant something you can actually rely on versus something that you get frustrated with because it gets it wrong enough. And I think that's, again, back to cars. That's one of the reasons that the cars are really keen on building us in, because actually they are building themselves into voice assistants. And I think that the number one issue consumers are having with their cars at the moment is the fact that the voice assistant doesn't work as well as it's marketed to. So This is somewhere where our tech and product teams are really, really interested in. It's a fascinating space for all us to be throwing ourselves into too. So I think that you'll see a lot more from voice assistants in general, and I'm sure in the e-commerce, logistics, supply chain world too, but also with What3Words, because we are such a good fit for that particular product.
Mm. And also it's super short. I mean, from a practical and pragmatic angle, I mean, some addresses are bloody long. I mean, and just realistically, I mean, I'm sitting on a pretty long street here in Singapore. So by the time I finished, even if it's by voice, which I typically would not do, and typically most cars, even, I mean, as you said, it's about accents and it's about tone of voice, tonality, and they get it wrong. Yeah. But it's also long. I mean, okay, I mean, when it compares 10 seconds to 3 seconds, but it's still, I think people like the simplest way, right? So for now, probably voice is not as used as it will be in a few years. But at the point of that, it will be also about how quickly can you say the address, right? So obviously,
absolutely. I mean, think index home raft really didn't take me a long time to say. I didn't have to give a town, a city, an area, a region, a country. It was just done. And yes, sure, I have to help by saying apartment 301. But the crux of it, the main bit, which is narrowing me down to a 3-meter entrance somewhere on the planet, took me about a second to say. And I think that is the point, as you say. Latitude and longitude or any other long, complicated code is really unwieldy for voice. I think that is the big focus for us, is how can we make it super simple for anybody to specify a location, however they're doing it.
Yes. Well, final question from us, and this is more about your entrepreneurial journey, right? And then I like to ask you, because there's people that listen to the podcast and they want to be or aspire to be entrepreneurs one day, or corporate people that want to step into the entrepreneurial world at some point. What is the best piece of advice, or some of the best pieces of advice that you've received throughout your journey, and how has it helped you?
I would say there's a combination of things, which probably sums up the two things that we have to do. I mean, one is absolute persistence. A lot of people, when we started, before we had any validation, a lot of people do want to see something. And when we started, we were going, hey, we think, you know, a great way of having an address system is to say sponge, cabbage, rhubarb, and that's only 3 meters square. And until you've got any sign of validation at all, the number of people on that who are going to be, let's say, first on that journey with you are much smaller. And you just got to push through that. You just got to know that you will gather them, you will find them, and that you will get to that next step. And I guess a lot of people say to us, you know, What3Words is a good idea or a great idea. But I guess what comes hand in hand in that is that if you have, in inverted commas, a great idea, a lot of people will see it as something which is different. And for people who don't like change, that's a problem. So I guess if you have an idea which feels new and different and bold, then you have to expect an equal and opposite force in some ways, saying actually this is new and not in a good way. If you have something which doesn't feel so new, you maybe won't be told it's such a great idea, but then you maybe will have less opposition. But, there's always like there's no situation in which is win-win. But what I'd say is just absolute persistence and determination. If you believe what you're doing works, and you are convinced on the use case, even if your mission is as bold as ours, which is to change the way that those 7 billion people talk about addresses, just push through and find the people and businesses who want to be first, who will propel you to that next stage. And I think second to that would be just, I always think about the kind of inventions that got through when they seemed that bit kind of different at first. And I often go back to the idea of the guy who first stuck wheels on a suitcase, late 70s. And before that, we all used to like lug our suitcases around by having to carry this thing, which was really heavy. And on one hand, like this wasn't a huge technological invention, right? It was a wheel and a suitcase of which we'd had both for quite a long time. But it took a while for someone to stick the one on the other. And actually, it took him 6 months to get a single department store to stock a suitcase on wheels, because everybody said it looked a bit weird, even though they could see it was useful and clearly made carrying a suitcase much easier. And sure enough, once everyone gets that past that first hurdle of, well, I tried it and it was good, and I like it. Sure enough, I'm pretty sure everybody's suitcase now has wheels on. You know, this is one example. You can see countless examples in this vein, but it's just about believing in what you're doing and finding the ways to standardize things which have felt new. And then everybody looks back on and goes, well, of course. And that's really the whole ethos of what we do here, is there's a massive, bold mission, but that's a good thing. And we work really hard to deliver on that.
Mm. Well said. The crux of it is also the fact that you have personally, and you're scratching your own itch, you have personally gone through the pain. You have started with your own personal pain of, you know, in the music industry, of people not finding ways and getting lost and equipment getting lost and all of that. So there is definitely a personal pain, and usually the most successful businesses also start with the founders scratching their own itch. So that's also a good starting point. But Chris, I must say, you definitely got me convinced and hooked, and I will be trying out What Three Words. I haven't done it yet, if you can imagine. And since I claim to be a specialist in supply chain and logistics, I'd better get my act together. So I will.
Yes, after you should find your three-word address.
I will for sure. I promise you, and I'll send you the proof that I've done it. Really appreciate our sharing. Appreciate you coming and joining us, and all the good stories and case studies and learnings that you had so far. And we wish you a successful and continuous journey. And I really hope that you know, next time you come to Singapore and we go for dinner, I'll give you the three words address for you.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Raddy.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamario.com/podcast for all the show notes, links, and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.